Welcome to Onc Live On Air. In today's episode, our discussion features Eric Whitman, MD, and Vishal Patel, MD, FAAD, FACMS. In our exclusive interview, Drs. Whitman and Patel discussed the evolving treatment paradigm for patients with cutaneous squamous cell carcinoma, emphasizing the role of neoadjuvant and adjuvant immunotherapies like cemiplimab and pembrolizumab. They noted that key factors for surgical candidacy include tumor size, location, and patient factors like age and comorbidities. They also emphasized that multidisciplinary collaboration is crucial for optimal outcomes. Furthermore, they highlighted future directions for CSCC management, including personalized medicine, genetic testing for recurrence risk, and expanding immunotherapy use to immunosuppressed patients. They also noted that ongoing trials aim to optimize treatment doses and explore new immunotherapy combinations.
For patients with a CSCC, you know, what are some of the key factors that can ultimately define if they are optimal candidates to undergo surgery?
Cutaneous squamous cell carcinoma is a very interesting cancer surgically, in part because we don't have a good idea of how many there are, because they're not staged appropriately by the AJCC. And so the volume is very weird. But the interesting developments around surgical indications also center on some of the newly approved systemic therapies and the therapies that are now more evolved. And what I mean by that is there's now approved systemic adjuvant therapy after surgery and radiation. That's cemiplimab. And both cemiplimab and pembrolizumab have been used in the neoadjuvant setting. And both of those have the opportunity to really change how we evaluate surgical patients.
For most patients with cutaneous squamous cell carcinoma, surgery remains the backbone, especially when we know we can achieve clear margins. But that needs to be balanced with whether that surgery is possible, if there's acceptable function, cosmesis concerns. And so that first decision point is resectability. Can we remove the tumor completely? What's the anticipated surgical morbidity? What is the anticipated outcome and the confidence for cure? So I'm looking at tumor factors, the size, the depth, the location, whether or not we suspect higher risk features like perineural invasion or proximal location to critical structures, whether there is any evidence of potential regional nodal disease, and then patient factors, the age of the patient, comorbidities, whether the patients are on an anticoagulant, or if there's wound healing risk. And then lastly, the immune status, as we know that immunosuppressed patients can have a much higher risk of aggressive tumors, and those tumors behave differently. And so systemic therapies have entered into our world. They've entered into our world even at earlier points than we traditionally have thought of that. And that's because of the advent of immunotherapy. We traditionally think of that for locally advanced or unresectable tumors when surgery is excessively morbid or disfiguring, certainly when there's regional distance spread and that surgery may not obtain a cure or might require adjuvant therapy. And so we're increasingly thinking of systemic therapy earlier and earlier on. And probably the most exciting is looking at it in the neoadjuvant setting, as there's been really remarkable results of utilizing systemic therapy upfront in borderline resectable tumors, and then being able to not only confirm complete pathologic response, but also potentially de-escalate surgery, de-escalate need for adjuvant therapy. And we select that now in certain high-risk cases, and that has been incorporated into the most recent version of the NCCN guidelines that borderline resectable tumors, that one should consider neoadjuvant therapy with cemiplimab immunotherapy.
How do you determine someone who might be a candidate to, you know, just undergo surgery alone and be okay versus someone who might, you know, might need that intensified systemic therapy added onto a surgical regimen?
When people present to me for a possible surgery for cutaneous squamous cell, we want to look at the size of the tumor, the location, where it is relative to very important structures. What would the morbidity be of surgery, right? A lot of these are head and neck. So is it going to alter their face? You know, what's the cosmesis of this at the end? If it's on the scalp, you have to worry, is it growing into the skull? You may have to get a CAT scan or an MRI to see what it's, if it's invaded surrounding structures. So a lot of it is the postoperative morbidity. And that's particularly relevant in today's world where we have really consistent evidence of the benefit of neoadjuvant checkpoint immunotherapy. If you can shrink that tumor, that may change a very morbid operation into a very straightforward, smaller operation.
Since the emergence of, you know, neoadjuvant options, has that allowed maybe more patients to eventually proceed to surgery when historically maybe a patient, you know, wouldn't have been a candidate, but after neoadjuvant therapy, maybe they're okay to potentially go that route?
Absolutely. And we use the term from an academic standpoint, neoadjuvant, where the intent is to give systemic therapy up front, then proceed with surgery, and then consider adjuvant therapy afterwards. Some people call that perioperative therapy that's utilized in Europe much more, and kind of these definitions are academic, so to speak. In the real world, in practical setting, we oftentimes are discussing just at that time point, is surgery the best option? That decision is being made with our surgical colleagues, as well as medical oncology colleagues, and considering the patient's priorities. And at that time point, the determination may be made that that is not the best option. We may denote that as borderline resectable or unresectable at that time point. And because immunotherapy is so robust, that scenario can change. So a colleague of mine, Dr. David Miller, has coined a term for response-determined therapy, frontline immunotherapy with response-directed treatment plans. And that really captures the scenario of where patients have a robust response, maybe one, two doses. What deemed to be unresectable or borderline resectable now has completely changed. We may feel comfortable resecting that to confirm if there is any histologic tumor left, which can really help us predict whether adjuvant therapy is necessary based on these studies. Or we may decide to continue on therapy since they're having a robust response. And so that ongoing discussion, both the beginning, the touch points in between while the patient is responding, is key across all those providers, especially the surgeons.
Someone I used to work with years ago once said that resectability is in the eye of the beholder. But, you know, surgeons, particularly head and neck surgeons, are trained to be very aggressive in cancer and feeling like they can take things out. And the neoadjuvant immunotherapy has forced them, I think, to change how they approach cutaneous squamous cell patients. Maybe they should hold off, you know, and see how the response is to neoadjuvant immunotherapy. I saw a review of 9 studies, a systematic review, a meta-analysis of 9 neoadjuvant studies in cutaneous squamous cell. And the overall reported response rate is 72%. So almost 3/4 of the patients have tumor shrinkage. So if you're thinking, oh, I can take that out, but yeah, it'll leave them with a big defect on their face or their scalp, but it's okay, maybe you should hold off, you know, and see what happens. And that's got to affect how you're going to approach the surgical evaluation of these patients preoperatively.
With the emergence of these immunotherapies and systemic therapies, you know, in this space right now, you know, how has that altered, you know, multidisciplinary care and kind of underscored the importance of, you know, having all these different specialists collaborate and determine that optimal treatment approach for a patient?
Well, skin cancer, and specifically cutaneous squamous cell carcinoma, it's an interesting disease process because it does not lie within one specialty. We use the analogy that it's not a siloed disease. It's kind of a Venn diagram that the patient has so many different touch points, especially in the locally advanced, the borderline resectable, unresectable settings. And so multidisciplinary care is paramount to optimal outcomes. The incorporation of that early on is critical. And so immunotherapy has pushed us to utilize that integrated team-based modality, that model. Historically, we would have a much more linear approach of dermatologists treating a tumor when applicable. If a tumor is more advanced, maybe referring that to a head and neck surgeon or a surgical oncologist, potentially having surgery and then deciding that the surgery was not definitive enough, there was a need for adjuvant therapy, and they may involve then a radiation oncologist and lastly a medical oncologist. Now we know, just from the data of neoadjuvant therapy and just immunotherapy as a whole, the sequence and timing of the use of systemic therapies, either before surgery, potentially now with the approval of cemiplimab in the adjuvant scenario, the consideration of adding that with or without radiation. All of these are complex discussions that need to happen in real time. It happened with all the team members discussing things together before a treatment decision is undertaken. So close coordination with dermatologic surgery, surgical oncology, ENT, radiation oncology, medical oncology, pathologists, radiology, and the ancillary team, you know, social workers, what does the family's support system look like? All of that needs to be tightly integrated, considered, to have the most patient-centric approach taken.
It's definitely affected how we approach these things from a multidisciplinary perspective. I think that cutaneous squamous cell is really fascinating in terms of the fact that it is so natural to have a multidisciplinary evaluation of a given patient. You have the dermatologist, you have the pathologist, because there are pathologic features that affect resectability and the risk of future metastasis. You have head and neck surgeons, plastic surgeons for reconstruction, surgical oncologists if they aren't head and neck. Mohs surgeons, you know, the dermatologists who are specifically trained in resection of cutaneous squamous cell, who see a lot of these patients. It's very multidisciplinary. And now, as you've pointed out, now we have the medical oncologists involved before, when there really wasn't a great medical oncology option before. So it lends itself to multidisciplinary care. We have a monthly tumor board in advanced skin cancers, and more we're presenting these cutaneous squamous cell patients.
As things, you know, continue to evolve, other systemic therapies come along, you know, how do you ultimately see the treatment paradigm for cutaneous squamous cell carcinoma continuing to evolve and potentially improve it for these patients?
Yeah, the immunotherapies have really changed how we approach cutaneous squamous cell. That's across the board, all medical specialties. So first you have the neoadjuvant therapy, which can shrink tumors almost three quarters of the time. Again, systematic meta-analysis has a 72.2% response rate. So that's incredible, all right? So it should change your evaluation of patients before you operate on them. And then after you operate on them, and if you radiate them based on certain criteria in the CPOST study, patients are now approved for adjuvant immunotherapy postoperatively. And if they recur, you know, systemically, and they have metastatic disease, then there's about a 50% response rate for systemic checkpoint inhibitor therapy at that point. So the options have just changed. And it used to be surgery plus or minus radiation, or radiation plus or minus surgery, and that was it. And now we have just an incredible potential to help these patients and potentially cure them.
This is a rapidly changing landscape. And what we're seeing is a shift to early and earlier systemic therapy in the right patients, in select high-risk patients. And so that neoadjuvant approach, or even potentially a just initial immunotherapy approach with or without surgery, where it's not necessary, is becoming more and more commonplace. The critical elements are is that as we gain more data, we get a better sense of answering the question, who's truly going to benefit up front, who needs maybe combined modality therapy, who can be cured with local therapy alone. And the main question then now is becoming, and what's exciting is we're entering in the next phase of building upon that data of how many doses does somebody need? Can we shorten those treatments down to three doses, two doses, or even potentially one dose, which has been excitingly considered as an optimal option for these patients to limit toxicity and have an optimal response with a limited dose. And then even further, going towards limiting systemic exposure at all. There are trials open right now with intralesional immunotherapy for the lower risk tumors that may open up the world into those populations that historically left out of systemic immunotherapy. Transplant patients, the highly immunosuppressed patients, do make worse tumors. If we can find a way to balance the risk of toxicity with the response in an intralesional approach. So those are some of the ways the paradigm is evolving, what the future leads to. It really comes to the message that we're really trying to tailor a patient-centric, personalized approach, not just over-treatment and utilizing immunotherapy broadly, but utilizing it in a targeted, smart way to get the exact well-tolerated response we hope to have.
So I see the next steps in the treatment of cutaneous squamous cell along a couple different lines. One is at some point in the therapy or the evaluation for therapy, you may want to get a genetic test that can perhaps predict the risk of recurrence or possibly response to adjuvant therapy or systemic therapy, or even response to radiation therapy. The test that seems to be the most advanced is the DecisionDx squamous cell carcinoma. It's a genetic test that is designed to help determine the risk of recurrent disease, but they're actually doing some studies looking at whether or not those results can determine the benefit or not from adjuvant radiation therapy. So that's an exciting, you know, personalized medicine impact. The next step, I think, is going to be the patients who unfortunately fail surgery and or radiation and or systemic immunotherapy. So right now we have single agent checkpoint inhibitor approvals for cutaneous squamous cell carcinoma. But what if they fail that? You know, what's the next line of therapy? There's nothing approved. And the people have looked at a few combinations. Anti-PD-1 and cetuximab have shown some promising results, but it's certainly not FDA approved. And who knows if there's going to be some new agent come down the road that could be the next step, the next phase in therapy for these patients. One of the interesting aspects of these patients is that in general, they tend to be older than average cancer patients. So cutaneous squamous cell carcinoma patients studies, the typical median average age is 72 or 73. So that's older than most studies. You know, most studies in cancer patients tend to be in the 50s and 60s, and this is in the mid 70s. And so that can affect your treatment options. You know, a lot of those patients will make the decision, I don't want to do anything, you know, or they may not be able to tolerate things as well, or their immune system may not be able to respond as well. A lot of unknowns go into that, but that's just a fact of cutaneous squamous cell is it tends to be a disease of older patients. One of the things that occurs to me as a surgeon is the use or the potential use of sentinel lymph node biopsy in cutaneous squamous cell carcinoma patients. People have used that over the years, not consistently, and that's because unlike with melanoma and other cancers, there was not an adjuvant systemic therapy approved. But now we have, because of the CEPO study, now we have adjuvant systemic cemiplimab therapy approved in cutaneous squamous cell carcinoma patients. So is that going to, in certain patients, lead to the use of sentinel node biopsy? Because the results of that sentinel node biopsy may make the patient eligible for adjuvant systemic immunotherapy under the criteria in the CEPO study. So I think that's something that's going to evolve over the next year or two. I don't think the answer is out there right now, but I think it's an interesting thing to think about.
In a patient who might have be indicated for different types of immunotherapy agents like a cemiplimab or a cosibelimab, and you know, and you have to make a decision between the two. You know, what are some of the factors that might help drive that exact treatment choice?
Yeah, it's a great time to be treating these patients because 5-10 years ago we didn't have any options really. Then we had one option, and now we have three FDA approved medications for non-resectable metastatic or locally advanced tumors. Pembrolizumab, cemiplimab, and cosibelimab. I think a lot of this data is still evolving. Some of the exciting points as we discuss on the new adjuvant side and the work has been done has focused on cemiplimab. I think we reach for that because we have that data. We have phase two and now an FDA-approved adjuvant therapy in cemiplimab with a robust phase three trial that led to that approval. So I can rely on that data when considering a new adjuvant or adjuvant approach. On the other hand, very excited and hopeful about cosibelimab, which currently has the approval similar to cemiplimab, pembrolizumab in the unresectable, locally advanced metastatic setting. But some of the exciting pieces for that medication may be the safety profile. It's a slightly different mechanism of action, targeting PD-L1 as opposed to PD-1 with cemiplimab and pembrolizumab. And it's been suggested in the initial trial data that led to the approval, as well as the new recent updated data, shows an extremely robust and safe toxicity profile. Much better tolerated, lighter side effects, grade 1, grade 2 types of side effects, minimal significant side effects, grade 3 and 4, if any at all. And whether that's because of a smaller population that was evaluated in or truly representative of the medication's benefit and difference, that's to be seen. And based on that, we are now actively pursuing new trials and exciting trials to look at potentially utilizing that in a new adjuvant setting, in other types of exciting settings, because we may be able to have, you know, our cake and eat it too with a safer medication and one that we can utilize more broadly. And the last point I'll say is with a drug, with immunotherapy, we always worry about a patient's tolerability. And so now with cosibelimab on the market, a more frail, potentially patient with a lot more morbidities who may need to be on therapy longer. I certainly am thinking about reaching for cosibelimab with that safety profile, as well as if patients are have had exposure to cemiplimab, maybe we've hit a wall. While we don't have data about switching, certainly gives us an option because of that safety profile, we're maybe a little bit more reassured. So exciting times to have all of these options for us.
So much progress in the past decade or so, but, you know, just given all that progress, you know, what unmet needs still must be addressed for this patient population as, you know, other trials and other drugs are developed here?
Yes, I mean, we've come a long way, but there still are several unmet needs. First and foremost, risk stratification or prediction of response. I mean, while we see really robust responses, both, you know, in the unresectable, the approval setting, about 50% response across all these drugs, that still means that 50% of patients are not responding, but complete or partial. Why is that? What else do they need? How can we predict that upfront and treat them with more aggressive therapy upfront to get a response before the disease progresses? On the neoadjuvant side, as well as the adjuvant side, can we predict who's going to respond and how many doses they may need? Can we treat somebody up front and wait longer and potentially push surgery down the line to have a confidence that the response will continue to evolve over time, which is what we believe, and not more doses are necessarily needed? And then is radiation absolutely necessary in the adjuvant setting? Can we potentially omit that, or if we have a robust response, omit that? So predicting and personalizing the treatment option with the data we have is one area that I think we'll be focused on for the next few years. Second, focuses on immunosuppressed patients. That still is an area, a big unmet need. Currently, really are evaluating only intralesional or non-immunotherapy approaches for them. There are some trials looking at immunotherapy, potential trials, a trial that initiated out of the Brigham and Mass General Hospitals. Contract trial looking at kidney transplant recipients. But this is an area that we really are hopeful that we can now expand immunotherapy into. And maybe cosibelimab, with its safety profile, is the medication we can utilize for that. So just some areas that have unmet needs. And the future is quite bright, because while those are the unmet needs, the potential of tapping into immunotherapy, whether that's intralesional, other types of mechanisms of action, there's a variety of other immunotherapy-like drugs that will be combined with anti-PD-1 inhibitors in an intralesional fashion that are going to be investigated, and that may help increase the response or capture those slight non-responders or stable disease patients to get them over the edge. So still a lot of work to do, but a lot of promise, both in the past and on the horizon. Great time to be taking care of these patients, to be able to really, we don't get to say the word that we've cured a cancer, but I can certainly say that we've seen remarkable outcomes and feel like we are curing people's aggressive skin cancers.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive On Air. Check back throughout the week for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On X and Blue Sky, follow us at OncLive. On Facebook, like us at OncLive, and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you liked today's episode of OncLive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you're there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive On Air.